Merhaba, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Turkish Breakfast Club. I'm your host, Miranda Lin. After being kept locked down at home for more than a year now, there's never been a greater need or appreciation for the great outdoors. One of the most famous natural attractions in Turkey is the Likyan Way, the first long-distance trekking route in the country. It stretches 540 kilometers along the southern Mediterranean coast, from Fethiye to Antalya, retracing the roads of the ancient Likyan civilization. Hiking the full route takes an estimated 29 days, which can be pretty intimidating, especially for those of us who maybe haven't been keeping up with our Stairmaster exercises during COVID. So to help us prepare, we could think of no better guide than Kate Clough, a British expat who created the Likyan Way as we know it today. She also founded the Culture Route Society to help establish more historic trails across Turkey and preserve them for future generations. So without further ado, let's get to it. Welcome to the Turkish Breakfast Club. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for asking me.
I'm so delighted that you could join us because I'm really fascinated by the Likyan Way. I think even before I arrived in Turkey, I had heard this name before, this term, as something really wonderful and famous about Turkey. And I assumed that it was something ancient that had existed for hundreds of years since the Likyan civilization. But actually, the actual trail itself is something that you created, that you researched and designed and marked yourself. So I would love to just know, like, how it started, how you even came up with this idea.
The trail itself is a mixture of sections of old road, but linked together into one continuous line with bits of more modern road, footpaths, and tracks that we created, all sorts of things in between, bits of forestry roads and so on. So when I moved to Antalya, which was, about 92, I think, I started collecting old roads. You know, I was doing quite a lot of walking in the hills and looking for sections of old road, physical old road, because Likya has been occupied probably in about 1000 BC, and the roads construction started then and went on right through the Roman and early Byzantine era, and then everything more or less stopped. And between about 900 and about 1700 or 1800, almost nobody lived here. And so the roads were unmaintained, unused, and so on, and just stayed there in the mountains. You know, obviously some were damaged by earthquakes or floods or whatever, you know, but the majority of the roads just stayed there. And in the 18th, 19th centuries, the population moved back. And the reason that they hadn't lived on the coast for quite some time was malaria, mainly malaria.
Oh, okay.
Because, but gradually that became under control. The coasts were settled. People lived on the coast during the winter and then went up to the mountains in the summer to, graze their animals and so on and keep out of the way of the malaria. And then in the 1950s, DDT came along, and that was it was at that time that it really enabled tourism, because before then, people couldn't live on the coasts during the summer. And the coasts began to be permanently settled again. The harbours were developed. But the first continuous road all the way around Likya was only made in the 1980s, the first motor roads, this was. And so when I arrived in Turkey, I was looking at bits of this road still under construction, and I could see that in doing this, making this road, they were destroying bits of older road underneath and so on. And these older roads were the roads that had remained for, 2,000 years. And were still, in many places, in the mountainous areas, still intact. So I used to go off exploring, looking for bits of road, and asking shepherds and so on. And eventually I had a whole collection of roads.
Were there any maps that you could use as a starting point for any of this?
No. The Turkish military maps were made in the 1980s, and they're actually very, very good, but they were secret and I couldn't get hold of them.
They weren't handing them out.
the only map I had was a coastal map, which was made by the Turkish Coast Guard, and it showed about 2 kilometres inland from the shore. So when I started putting these roads together, it had to be a coastal road, a route, because that was the only map I had. So I started developing the route in the early 90s because Guarantee Bank were running a competition for a project at that stage. They were looking for something to something new to sponsor. So I started to put these roads together into one continuous route and presented this to them as an idea, and they said, okay, go ahead. So that was how the official Likinway started. It was a roads collection well before then. And then it took about 3 or 4 years to get the thing properly established after that.
To market properly?
No, it wasn't so much marketing. It was getting permissions for things, because this sort of thing hadn't been seen in Turkey before. Nobody knew what to do with it. So Guarantee Bank went to the tourism ministry. Can we mark the route? What's a route? Oh, we don't know about this. Maybe the forestry should give you permission. Go and see the forestry.
Right.
So it went backwards and forwards like that between the forestry and the agriculture ministry and the tourism ministry and the culture ministry and so on, all around in circles for quite some time, until eventually culture took it on and then decided that,
someone finally decided, said yes.
But it took at least a year and a half of going around these ministries and working out who was going to take some responsibility, because nobody wanted it. And they still don't want it. You know, this tourism is still very sort of, what's this? We really don't understand this. It's not conventional tourism. So eventually we waymarked the route, and it didn't take that long to waymark it. You know, it's a few months, but not very long, 3 or 4 months. The book was finished, everything was done, and it opened in 1999. And I was really surprised that anyone actually came to walk on the thing. But it actually had quite a good bit of press coverage. And in the first year, it started to take off with foreign walkers. No Turks. I mean, no Turks went near it for many years. Yeah.
What was the apprehension on the Turkish side, do you think?
No, Turks didn't walk. I mean, you know, nobody walked in those days. Don't forget that most rural Turks, their fathers had been or their grandfathers had been shepherds, and the last thing they wanted to do was go and walk. You know, they wanted a Mercedes. They wanted to drive around, in a posh car. why would we walk? you know, grandfather walked for work. We don't have to walk.
British people, especially, seem to really enjoy just a leisurely walk out. And I'm thinking, You were saying you put together this collection of little roads that you discovered. I'm like, how did you even discover these roads? Like, you must have just wandered off into the field and just to see what was.
It's not so difficult. If you know where the ancient sites are, you can pretty soon find the routes in between them, because you know, they have to cross certain rivers to go over certain passes and so on. There's certain key choke points, and you can usually identify them from there. You get into the mind of the people who designed and built these roads, you know, and work out what they took into consideration when they were building them. You know, they would only work within certain limits of certain gradients. To bridge a river, they needed rock on either side so they could build a bridge properly. Things like that. So, you know, once you know what they needed in order to construct a road, then you can go and find it. Yeah, it's not too difficult.
Were you already interested in this history before, or in trekking before? Like, was there, you already built up this knowledge?
I trekked quite a bit in France and in the UK, yes. So I'd had some experience with old roads and things before.
In those places, are there also similar sort of?
Yes. I mean, you know, the Roman Empire had a standard of construction which operated all the way from Spain to Eastern Turkey. more or less. And they were absolutely standard. Their methods of construction, their methods of design, and so on and so on. Now, they obviously didn't start from nothing because there were roads in these areas before they arrived, but they adapted local roads. But there's a sort of standard of Roman road building which stretches all the way around the Mediterranean and as far north as France and UK and so on as well.
Wow.
Despite this Roman regimentation, were there anything in Turkey that surprised you that you thought, oh, well, this I haven't seen this one before from
yes, Romans? There's an area just north of Antalya around the St. Paul Trail in Pisidia, where the roads are different. And they're different because there is a special type of local limestone that breaks up into huge blocks. And so the roads are made of very distinctive blocks of limestone instead of being paved with limestone. And they're remarkable. And how they lifted these blocks into place, I have no idea, because they are enormous. But that is a distinctive style just found in some areas in the Taurus Mountains, where the limestone is of a particularly good quality.
Yeah, I guess I hadn't thought about just how important roads are in these ancient civilizations.
Yes, of course. If you go back to the pre-internet era, pre-wireless era, pre-everything else era, you know, this is what stitched the empire together. The Roman Empire ran on two things: its army and its supply of goods to Rome. The emperor had to keep the population happy by keeping them supplied with corn and so on, and most of that went by sea. But to get to the sea, it had to be shipped by land to a port. So a lot of the roads in Lycia were actually contributed to supplying Rome with grain. And the other thing that was important, of course, was the military and the associated services that went with the military, like the tax collection, the communications, the messages to the emperor and so on, the way the governors reported into the Senate and ran their provinces. And that was entirely dependent on the road network. And it was efficiently developed because it had to be. If you were running an empire as big as the Roman Empire was, you needed very efficient communications from end to end.
Do you have a favorite section of the Lycian Way that is special to you?
It varies according to the seasons, you know, and there's some particular sections I like at different times of the year. You know, in the summer, there are a couple of sections which run down riverbeds, down canyons, and of course, they're much cooler in the summer, much nicer. But in the winter, when the water's really fast and cold, yeah, I don't want to be there. and there's some very upland sections. I like the sections where I can meet the shepherds, you know, the local people who live along the route. And it's nice to see them, you know, to look them up and to ask them what they're doing and so on. And,
yeah, I mean,
see how they are.
You mentioned it a little bit before, but what was the reaction of locals as you were setting up this trail? I mean, it sounds like they're a bit baffled, but I mean, were they pretty open to the idea of...
Oh, yeah, very, very open, yes. I mean, in some of the villages, there was a competition. You know, I wanted to go past my doorstep, you know. And there are one or two places where people fight over it. You know, they reroute it past their own little shop or restaurant or something.
Really? Yeah. I would have thought there might be a bit of skepticism towards outsiders coming in and crossing through like their backyard or something.
No, we've had almost no problems like that at all.
British hospitality.
Yeah, I mean, Turks have a completely different view on trespass to the average European. They don't care if someone's wandering across their land, provided they're not doing any physical harm.
Right.
And they're so curious to see people and hear different stories and so on and learn things that, they certainly don't mind having strangers walking past. But they got really used to foreigners very quickly because for the first 5 years, there were just no Turks walking on the route at all. And so they thought of it as a route for foreigners. and then the
foreigners owned.
And then Turks started using it for the first time.
So what was the turning point for Turks to finally kind of click in and get into this?
It was Ortadoğ, the university scout group from Ankara. They planned the walk for the whole of the Lykien Way, and they were going to do it. They did it in relays. So I think there were 25 sections, and there were about 25 scouts, and that was the starting point. And because it was organised by university, all the other university mountain clubs and scouts groups also started to get involved and interested and thought that they would like a go too. And so it became popular with the Turkish university students. And then, of course, they grew up and they had families and so on, and they kept coming back.
I think I've always been really interested in doing it, but in my mind, it's something... I mean, you just read the details of like over 500 kilometers, 30-day trek, and I'm just, I don't know if I'm ready for it. And so I wonder if you have any sort of tips for people who are just getting started in the hiking world, who maybe don't have a ton of experience.
It starts easy and gets harder. So I would recommend starting at the Fethiye end, because the sections are quite short. There's plenty of accommodation. It's hilly, but it's not too hilly. The track is very well defined there. And, the first 3, 4, 5 days are, they're easygoing. They're fine. So a lot of people start, with a 3-day, 5-day section and then decide whether they like it or not and then come back and do some more. It's one of the easier ways to start.
Do you recommend any particular time of year that's the best conditions?
The ideal time would be end of March, April, something like that. Yeah.
Before it gets too hot.
Before it gets too hot. We still have people go out in the summer and...
the extremists.
Do you have any tips for people who are ready to do the whole thing of like ways to get the most out of the experience?
I think the thing is not to hurry. Take it easy, build up your stamina gently from the start. I mean, because it starts easy, you can take it easily for the first few days. And by the time you've done a week, your stamina's built up and you're feeling much fitter and more energetic and so on. But the other thing I would say is don't bring anything you don't need. Just be very careful what you pack, because you've got to carry it.
You shouldn't bring that. Extras just in case, the backup.
Throw it out. You do not need it.
Let's pause here to catch our breath and remind you to check out some of our previous episodes. If, like me, you've been obsessed with the Olympics, and especially the Turkish women's volleyball team, you'll want to hear a chat last week with pro volleyball player Merve Aktaş. But we've also talked with other experts about Turkish food and drinks, and have tips for you about learning the language and blending in with the culture. So please subscribe, share, and follow us at The Turkish Breakfast Club. Now, onward, back to the show.
You've also created many other routes around Turkey, like the Lykien Way was maybe just a starting point. And since then, you've created several other trails.
Yes. I mean, but we're also working on a very long distance, very long project, and that we're connecting Turkey to Europe through trails. And we're working with organizations in Italy and Albania and Greece and so on, and building up a long distance route which will run from Rome through Albania, through northern Greece to Turkey, and then from Istanbul right down to finish on the Lykien Way.
Really?
Yeah. It's a very big project, yeah.
Routes already exist, or are you kind of creating like connecting sections that you have to?
We're connecting, yes. I mean, for example, the Italian section is pretty much complete. I've just come back from Albania, actually, where I've been walking on the section there, and that's looking really good. No problems.
Do these places have more also well-developed sort of cultures of walking and creating, setting up these trails?
Well, this is what's so interesting. For example, the trail in Albania, the Albanians are like the Turks, they don't walk. You know, being in Albania is like being in Turkey 20 years ago. And the last thing anyone wants to do is go and walk. but the same, so the trail in Albania was actually developed by a Dutch team who did all the research. So we're working with them. We're now also working with local Albanians who are just beginning to start walking and to get involved in their local routes and so on. The culture's changing there as well. It's also changing in Greece, and until quite recently the Greeks didn't walk. And then there was a demand for walking holidays on the islands. So people started making little trail networks on some of the holiday islands. And now people are walking on the mainland and so on and so on. So the culture is changing completely right the way across.
Slowly, you're bringing walking to the world.
Yeah. So it's working its way right the way through.
Have you found that there are pockets of resistance in Turkey, of places that are maybe less open to the idea of creating these routes?
Yeah, yes, there are, but not very many. Trekkers are pretty harmless on the whole. You know, they're not doing any damage mainly, and they're not. They've got no transport. They can't steal your antiques or run off with stuff and so on. So, which is what people always say to me.
The times I've been out in nature, it's always gorgeous. It's always beautiful. But I'm always alarmed by how much sort of littering I see, how much sometimes on the ruins there's a bit of like ML plus XY heart. And I wonder, as great as the idea of bringing people outside and encouraging walking, bringing that culture, if the culture of like environmentalism and conservation and respect for nature hasn't quite caught up yet. And so it is
a risk.
It's catching up. It's beginning to catch up, but it's very, very difficult to keep everything in step. Generally speaking, once people start to see that they can make an income out of tourism, then they want to preserve the things that bring the tourists. As soon as a village has a pension or a shop that is making money out of tourists walking through, then they have a reason to look after their old road. But then there's the sort of in-between stage where, the tourist numbers haven't built up enough for people to see a local advantage. And then there may be a bit of a problem at that stage. But generally, trekkers don't leave litter, generally. There's no real problem there. The people who leave litter are, more likely to be local people out for a picnic or, somewhere they can drive in a car. But you're right, there is very little environmental awareness from that point of view. And the authorities are not doing anything to encourage it, unfortunately. Kids don't learn in school about dumping litter or anything like that. Rural communities don't have the facilities to have their rubbish taken away from them. And some dump rubbish simply because they have no other alternative. There is no facility at all to dispose of it. And life has changed so much so quickly that people now are inundated by plastic, which they never saw 10, 15, 20 years ago.
But do you find that as more people are getting into nature, that there's something that's switching on of like, I want to leave it as I've found it and not leave my Coca-Cola bottles on the side of the way?
Yeah, it's definitely changing, especially now because, since the pandemic, there's more and more of a movement out of Istanbul of, reasonably well-educated people who want to spend some time in the villages, either to work remotely or to have a holiday home where they know they're safe from any new pandemic or anything. Or they want to bring their children up in a better environment and so on. But at the same time, there are plenty of developers who just want to slap up some concrete and sell it to a foreigner. And because the local municipalities rely on building licenses for a lot of their income. They can't discourage it very much because they'd be cutting off their income.
Is that starting to threaten the routes that you've set up?
Yeah. We're quite often, trying to stop construction in some way or another by putting things under preservation. And one of the worst things is quarrying, because that can do an enormous amount of damage very, very quickly. And the site is used for 2 years or something and then abandoned. But also villa construction and so on, it's very difficult to stop this. Once someone's bought a plot of land, there's very little that can be done to actually stop them building. And foreigners will come along and buy these properties, irrespective of the things that they... the fact that they are technically illegal. They're not very well guided legally and so on. They're just carried away by the prospect of a villa overlooking the Mediterranean with this nice little swimming pool. They don't think where the water's coming from the swimming pool or anything like that. You know.
Have you had to change the route of the Lykkeum Way at all because of these new developments? Have you had to reroute things around?
We've rerouted something like, 60 kilometres in the last few years because of, various developments and things. Well, that's one of the problems, you see, because until villas were built, people didn't care about trespass or anything like that. So you could run the routes through someone's farming land without any problem, really. No one would be bothered about it at all. But once foreigners move in, foreigners like fences. they like to know where the boundary of their land is, and they like to put a fence around it. Yeah, so they're not moving into the culture as it exists. They're trying to impose their own culture from outside.
What a shame. I mean, foreigners were the first ones to sort of enjoy the benefits of the Lykkeum Way, and now they're the ones who are also sort of a threat to its spirit of it.
Which is a bit annoying.
So you've now been hiking around Turkey for maybe 30 years or so?
Up
on 30 years?
A long time now, yeah.
Is there a part that you still haven't discovered or that you're still looking forward to exploring more?
I've never had the opportunity to look at the area around Hakkari, for example. I've been to Hakkari. I've looked at the mountains at the time. The military were really discouraging it. And really, I'd love to spend some time in the mountains around south of Lake Van and around Hakkari, that area. It's a very interesting area, many, many old churches in that area. But I've also got a little expedition planned around Istanbul. We're looking for the old road between Nicomedia, which is Izmit, and Şile. And hope we'll be able to find that. With a bit of luck.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. This is so helpful and so interesting.
Thank you, indeed.
Happy trails.
Yeah, happy trails to you too.
This episode was recorded just before the devastating wildfires took hold in Antalya and many other places across southern Turkey. Kate and her team at the Culture Roots Society are safe, but the fires have had a devastating impact on the people, wildlife, and environment. Our condolences go out to everyone affected, and we've posted links on Facebook and Instagram with ways that you can help. It's also a reminder again of the greater respect and care we all need to show toward nature. Geçmiş olsun Turkey, and until next time, görüşürüz.